Chapter 10. What is it about this world that so causes you trouble? Why avow in your tone this victim role? And the plaintive hurt painting your eyes bemoans a life's struggle ever paying a grievous toll. We gathered in one place under the selfsame sun, and the bronze woman holding the basin, her breasts settled in the bowl, looked down with pity. Or was it contempt? She is a queen of dreams, and her gift is yours to take. Pity, if you choose it, or contempt behind the veil. I would have polished those eyes for a better look. I would have caressed those roses for a sweeter taste. When we drink from the same cup, and you make bitter recoil, I wonder at the tongue in waiting, and your deadening flavors so eager to now despoil. What is it about this world that so causes you trouble? What could I say to change your wounded regard, if my cold kiss must fail and my milk run sour beneath the temple bell that so blights your award? 10,000 hang from trees, their limbs bared, roots starved of hope in the sun, and the woodcutters are long gone, up to where the road gives way to trails in the dust that spiral and curl like the smoke of fires. They are blazing beacons in the desert night. It was said by the lepers huddled against the hill that a man with no hands, who could stare only as could the blind upon the horrors of argument, did, with one hand gone, reach into the dark sky, and with the other, too, gone, he led me home. Woodcutters, Tablets 2 and 3, Hethra of Aran. The edge of the glass desert was a broken line of crystals and boulders, for all the world like an ancient shoreline. Aranikt could not pull her gaze from it. She sat slumped in the saddle of her wearily plodding horse, her hood drawn over against the blistering sun, off to one side of the main column. Prince Bryce rode somewhere ahead, near the vanguard, leaving her alone. The desert's vast flat stretch was blinding, the glare painful and strangely discordant, as if she was witnessing an ongoing crime, the raw lacerations of a curse upon the land itself. Stones melted to glass, shards of crystal jutting like spears, others that grew like bushes, every branch and twig glittering as if made of ice. Rolled up against the verge there were bones, heaped like driftwood. Most were shattered, reduced to splinters, as if whatever had befallen the land had taken in a massive fist each creature and crushed the life from it. It felt like a deliberate act, an exercise in unbelievable malice. She thought she could still taste the evil, could still feel its rotted breath on the wind. Waves of nausea spread out from her stomach again and again, slow as a creeping tide, and when it washed its way back, when it retreated, it left a residue in her own bones.
"This place, it wants to kill me. I can feel it."
Her skin was clammy and cool beneath her cloak.
"It wants inside, eager as an infection. Who could have done this? Why? What terrible conflict led to this?"
She imagined that if she listened carefully enough, if all the sounds of thousands of soldiers marching and hundreds of wagons rolling were to suddenly fall away, if even the wind moaned into silence, she might hear still the droning words of the ritual that had ignited the fires, creating the desecrating cruelty that would become the glass desert.
"This is what despair leads to, the kind of despair that steals light from the world, that mocks life's own struggle to exist, to persist, denying our desire to heal, to mend all that we break, refusing hope itself. If despair has a ritual, it was spoken here."
Riding this close to the glistening edge, to the banks of bones and cracked boulders, she felt as if she was taking it inside herself, as if deadly crystals had begun growing within her, whispering awake in the echoes of ancient words.
When all you are is made wrong, this is how it feels.
Bryce Bedick's army was many days behind the other two, for the prince had made certain he was the last to leave the Bone Hunters. They had marched with them to the desert's very edge, 8 days through an increasingly parched and forbidding land. She wondered if he'd been hoping to change the adjunct's mind, to convince her of the madness of her determination to cross the glass desert. Or perhaps he had been considering accompanying that doomed force. For the first time since they had become lovers, Bryce had closed himself to her.
And not just me, to everyone. And on the day we parted from them, he stood near Tavare, but he said nothing.
Nor, as we all watched the Bone Hunters form up and set out, crossing that ghastly midden of crystals and bones into the harsh glare beyond, we all watched, and not one of us, not one in the entire mass of soldiers, had a thing to say. When the last burdened wagon rocked over the berm, and the last of the dust swirled away in the Malazan's wake, when the column wavered and smeared in the fierce glare and rising heat, Bryce had turned to face her. The look in his face shocked her, cut through her every defense. Whatever he had thought to do to dissuade the adjunct, the moment had passed. No, 1,000 moments. 8 days' worth, and not one grasped, not one taken in hand like a weapon. The brittle wall of silence had defeated him, defeated them all. That look,
helpless, filled with abyss below, filled with despair.
She was a singular woman, was Tavare Paran. They could all see that. They had all witnessed the terrible majesty of her will. And her soldiers followed. That had been for Erenicht the hardest thing to witness. The squads fell in, the companies formed up, and as they marched past Prince Bryce, they offered him a sharp, perfect salute.
As if on a parade ground, eyes hidden in the shadow of their helms, that closed fist on the chest, expressions chiseled from stone. Gods, I will never forget that, any of it. Those faces, horrifying in their emptiness. Those soldiers, veterans of something far beyond battles, far beyond shields locked and swords bared, beyond even the screams of dying comrades and the desolation of loss. Veterans of a lifetime of impossible decisions, of all that is unbearable and all that is without reconciliation.
Bryce Bedict rode to the head of the column then, to lead his soldiers south along the very edge of the glass desert. It was clear that as soon as they reached its southernmost end, he would swing the army eastward, and the pace would become savage. They were a week or more behind the Perish and the Evertine Legion. Erenicht lit another stick of rust leaf. Her neck ached as she found it impossible to face forward, to look ahead. The glass desert held her.
They're out there. Do they reel beneath its onslaught? Has its madness infected them? Are they even now killing each other, frenzied with fever? It has been 3 days. They might already be dead, every one of them. More bones to crush, to push towards the shoreline, the only retreat left to them.
She looked again at the bleached splinters.
Did you all try to cross the desert?
The very notion chilled her. Shivering beneath her cloak, she forced her gaze away from the horror on her left, only to see its mangled verge stretching ahead, southward alongside the column, until the two seemed to merge in the hazy distance.
Bryce, my love, from all of us, what will you now forge? We Lethary have known too many defeats of late, and we tasted our own blood yet again against the Narook. Not so bitter that time, for we saved the Bone Hunters. Still, we pale beside our allies. In their shadow we are diminished, and yet they saluted us.
She could not get that moment out of her mind. The faces haunted her, and she feared they would do so for the rest of her life.
Whose army are they, these Bone Hunters? What is their cause? And the strength within them, where does it come from? Is it held in the soul of the adjunct? No, at least I don't think so. Oh, she is the focus for them all, but they have no love for her. They see her, if at all, as no different from a mountain, a column of storm clouds, a bitter grey sea. They see her as part of the natural world, a thing to be born, to be weathered. I saw in their faces the erosion of her will, and they bore it. They bore it as they did all else. These Malazans, they shame the gods themselves.
Coming up on us fast, Highness, out of the northwest.
Bryce nodded. Draw in the flying wing, Preda. I will take out our standard-bearer and my Atreceda. When you see us ride out from the column, fall the wing in behind us.
Yes, Highness.
Bryce listened to the Preda dispatching riders, one out to the flanking wing of light cavalry, another to retrieve Aranikt from down the column. The standard-bearer rode up beside the prince, his face pale and drawn.
No need for alarm, soldier, Bryce said to the young man. This shall be a meeting of allies.
But lizards, sir.
Kachain Chimal, not short tails. I am sure you have heard the army now approaching us subsequently defeated the Naruk.
The young man nodded, nervously licking his lips. Bryce studied him.
Seljar, our clash with the Naruk, was that your first taste of battle?
Yes, sir.
You bore this standard?
No, sir. Well, I was the third to take it up that day, and by then we were in full retreat.
Withdrawal, Bryce corrected. Trust me, a full retreat is a far messier thing than what we managed.
Yes, sir.
Bryce glanced up at the standard and fought down a groan, reminded once again of his brother's perverse humor.
Not a legion standard, no. The Imperial Standard, no less.
Depending from a cross-bridge of iron, the cloth was a tattered rectangle of colourless wool. It was, in fact, a fair copy of Tehol's blanket, almost to scale. And where one might expect some elegant or proud heraldic crest at centre, there was instead the new royal sigil of King Tehol, the only of leather. A three-quarter-on rendition of his brother's rooftop bed. And if one looked carefully, one would see, cowering beneath that bed, a row of six plucked, but living, hens. Eyeing it, Bryce recalled his meeting with Tehol upon the unveiling.
You would have our armies fight under that?
Well, I did. The bed, I mean. And so did the chickens. Can you imagine the extent of their holy dread, knowing that God wanted to cook them? All right, not their God, not precisely. Though we cannot actually be sure of that, can we? Bug, are you worshipped by hens and cocks?
Not both at the same time, sire.
Thank you. Most enlightening.
My very reason to exist, sire. You are welcome. Tehol.
Yes, Bryce?
I understand your notion that dignity cannot be found in the, material. Not a throne, not a crown, not even a fine estate or whatnot. But when it comes to the military...
Oh, that's all I ever hear from you, brother. It's not that way in the military, Tehol. The enlisted won't go for that, Tehol. They don't like pink, Tehol. The pathetic conservatism of that hoary institution is, frankly, embarrassing.
I don't recall any mention of pink, sire.
There wasn't, Bug. I was being illustrative.
What kind of illustration did you have in mind? Shall I summon the court artist again?
Abyss, no. After that debacle with my wife and that pretty guard.
Ex-guard, sire.
Really? By whose order? I demand to know.
Your wife, the queen, sire.
That interfering cow! Oh, don't look at me like that, beloved. I was but referring to you in your official capacity. Thus, while I rail at the queen, my love for my beautiful wife remains in its usual beaming manner forever untarnished.
Too bad the same cannot be said for that poor young woman, husband.
I never tarnished her, not once. Tehol, have you seen that damned painting? Only once, dearest, since you went and burned the only copy. And that's right, you look well at this wagging finger. That artist has been depressed ever since.
More like running scared, suggested Bug. Tehol, about this Imperial Standard.
Not again, Bryce. I thought we were past all that. It's lovely and most apt. But who will rally under it? Bryce, if an army must rally, one must presume it is in dire straits, yes? Well then, where better to hide than under the king's bed?
With all the other chickens, added Bug. Well now, sire, that's clever.
Hold on, said the queen. What did you mean by the only copy? Bryce, rally the troops!
Sweating under the bright sun, the king's brother snorted, but how he missed those days now. The chaotic palace of King Tehol seemed very far away. He squinted up at the standard and smiled. Aranect arrived, reining in.
Prince, it pleases me to see you smiling. What so amuses you?
Nothing, Atreseda. That is, nothing of import. We have been found by the Kachain Chimal. Such a motley collection of allies we make, don't you think? No matter. Ride with me. I would become acquainted with our new commanders.
The woman frowned.
Are they not two common marines, sire? Anyone can acquire a title. It hardly makes them fit to demand the obedience of a prince, not to mention the Queen of the Balkando.
Gessler and Stormy are far more than just Malazan marines, Aranict, and I am not referring to their new titles.
I don't recall meeting them.
I will be pleased to introduce you, if you like.
With the standard-bearer 20 paces ahead, they set out side by side, horse hoofs thumping as if on hollow ground.
Bryce, do you hear that?
We ride across an ancient lake bed, he said. Often the lake remains, but only beneath the surface, and I think that must have been the case here once, but now...
The water's gone.
Yes, gone.
Might we all fall through?
He shrugged.
So now even the ground under us is uncertain.
I am sorry, Aranict. I have been neglecting you.
Yes, you have.
The flying wing was swinging in behind them, 30 blue rose lancers in perfect formation. Bryce thought about the soldier he'd lost. To love, no less. Henar Vigolf now marched with the bone hunters. And if I have sent him to his death, I do not think he will curse my name.
I am not very good with grief, Aranict. When our parents died, well, without Tehol and Hull, I don't think I would have made it through. Kuru Khan once told me that grieving had nothing to do with the ones gone, and everything to do with the ones left behind. We feel the absences in our life like open wounds, and they never really close, no matter how many years pass.
Do you grieve, then, for the adjunct and the bone hunters?
It makes no sense, does it? She is a difficult woman to like. She views a human gesture as if it was some kind of surrender, a weakness. Her responsibilities consume her because she will allow herself nothing else.
It was said she had a lover, said Aranict. She died saving Tavare's life.
Imagine the wound that made.
No one wants to be unliked, Bryce. But if it must be so, one can strive for other things, like respect or even fear. Choices fall away without you even noticing until there are very few left and you realize that you are nothing but what you are.
Bryce thought about that and then sighed.
I should have liked her. I should have found something beyond her competence, beyond even her stubbornness, something.
Bryce, what is it that you grieve over? Is it your own failure to find in Tavare the reasons you need for following her?
He grunted. I should have talked to you days ago.
You were too busy saying nothing.
I stayed close as long as I could, like a man dying of thirst. Was she my salvation, or just a mirage?
He shook his head.
We won't turn back, will we?
No, we won't.
We'll see this through.
Yes, and so I must hide my uncertainty from my officers, from my soldiers.
But not from me, Bryce.
He turned to study her face, was shocked to see tears streaking her dusty cheeks.
Aranict?
Never mind this, she said, as if angry with herself. Do you want to be like her, Bryce? Do you want your responsibilities to consume you?
Of course not.
And since we began marching with the bone hunters, what has the adjunct given you?
Not much.
Nothing, she snapped. Nothing but silence. Every time you needed something else, she gave you silence. Bryce, you've said little to anyone for days. Don't take on someone else's wounds. Don't.
Chastened, he looked ahead. A dark stain of legions in the hazy distance, and a nearer group, humans and lizards both, drawing closer.
When the Guardian of the Names came for me, the sea ran from him like tears. But I was dead by then. I saw none of that. Only upon my rebirth did these visions find me. I see poor Rulad Sengar lying cut and broken on the blood-spattered floor, crying out to his brothers. I see them turn away. I see my body slumping down against the dais. I see my king sitting lifeless on his throne. Could we but have left him there, so useless to resist the puppet masters who ever gather to symbols of power? Are they all so blind as to not see the absurdity of their ambitions, the pathetic venality of all their petty scheming? Grasp those dead limbs, then, and make him do your will. I have dreamed the names of 1,000 lost gods. Will I ever speak them? Will I break upon this world one last time those names of the fallen? Is that enough to give remembrance to the dead? A name upon my breath, spoken out loud, a whisper, a bold shout. Will a distant soul stir, find itself once more? In speaking a god's name, do we conjure it into being?
Bryce,
Erenicht,
did you hear me?
I did, and I will heed your warning, my love. But you should bear in mind that sometimes solitude is the only refuge left. Solitude and silence.
He saw how his words left her shaken and was sorry.
Shall I by name resurrect a god? Force its eyes to open once more, to see what lies all about us, to see the devastation we have wrought? Am I that cruel, that selfish? Silence. Tavare, I think I begin to understand you. Must the fallen be made to see what they died for, to see their sacrifice so squandered? Is this what you mean, what you have always meant, by unwitnessed?
Now it is you who weep. Errant shove, Bryce. What a wretched pair we make. Gather yourself, please. We are almost upon them.
He drew a shaky breath and straightened in his saddle.
I could not have stopped her, Erenicht.
Did you really expect to?
I don't know, but I think I have figured something out. She gives us silence because she dares not give us anything else. What we see as cold and indifferent is in fact the deepest compassion imaginable.
Do you think that is true?
I choose to believe it, Erenicht.
Well enough, then.
Bryce raised his voice.
Bearer!
The young man reined in and swung his mount out to the right. Bryce and Erenicht drew up alongside him. The two marines had dismounted, joining a woman, a boy, and a girl. The woman was middle-aged, possibly an all by birth. The children were Malazans, though clearly unrelated. Had he seen these two before? In the palace? Possibly. Behind them all stood a half dozen Kachane Chemal, including three of the saddled creatures. Two of the remaining lizards were not as robust, yet bore huge blades instead of hands, while the third one was broader of snout, heavier of girth, and unarmed. Two ragged-looking dogs wandered out from between the legs of the lizards. The humans approached.
Erenicht, said Bryce under his breath, tell me what you see.
Not now,
she said, her voice hoarse. He glanced across to see her setting alight a stick of rust leaf, her hands shaking.
Tell me this, at least. Shall a prince of Letha relinquish command to these ones?
Smoke hissed out, and then,
the marines. Yes, for one simple reason.
Which is?
Better them than those two children.
I see.
At 5 paces away they halted, and the clean-shaven marine was the first to speak.
his eyes on the standard, he said,
"So, it's true."
Bryce cleared his throat.
"My brother, the king, has no respect at all for the institutions of the military," said the Marine, nodding. "Could take me. For that reason alone, I'd follow him anywhere. What think you, Stormy?"
The man scowled, scratched his red beard, and then grunted.
"Do I have to?"
"Do what?"
"You oaf, I was saying, and I wasn't listening. So how do I know what you were saying, Gessler? And do I even care? If I did, I'd probably have listened, wouldn't I?"
Gessler muttered something and then said to Bryce,
"Prince, I'd beg you to excuse my companion's boorish manners, but then he ain't 5 years old, and I ain't his dada. So feel welcome to regard him with disgust. We do, all of us here. Ain't that right, Stormy?"
"I ain't listening."
"Prince Bryce, about the chain of command the adjunct wants. I am content, mortal sword, Gessler, to accede to her wishes."
"Well, we ain't." "You got that right," Stormy growled. "It's all right, Gess, handling the Chimal. It's all down to smells, you see. All he needs to do is fart or whatever, and all the swords come out, which, come to think of it, is just like old times. In the barracks, why, it's down to trust," said the boy.
The bigger of the two dogs had drawn up next to him. Belligerent eyes glared out from a mangled face. No one spoke. The silence stretched.
"You'd better explain that, Grub," said Gessler, his expression dark.
Bryce started to speak, but Aranicht stayed him with a hand on his arm.
"It's down to the people she knows best," Grub continued. "That's all."
"We saved their lives,"
blurted the standard bearer, his face flushed.
"That's enough, soldier," said Bryce. "What the boy says makes sense, Gessler. After all, what can she make of our motives? This is her war. It always has been. Why are we here? Why does Queen Abrastel seem intent on making this her cause as well? The bone hunters brought the Lethary to their knees. Might we not harbour resentment over that? Might we not contemplate betrayal? As for Balkando, well, from all accounts, the Cundrill laid waste to vast regions in that kingdom and spilled the blood of the queen's subjects. Together with the Perish, they effectively subjected Balkando to outright extortion.
So why should she have any better reason to trust us?" Gessler demanded. "We got snatched, and now we're commanding our own damned army of lizards. The fact is, we deserted the—"
"I ain't deserted nothing," Stormy shouted.
The smaller of the two dogs barked. Bryce noted the growing alarm on the face of the all-woman. He caught her eye and said,
"You are the Destriant?"
"I am Kallith," she said. "I do not understand what is going on, the way you use the trader's tongue. There are words I don't know. I am sorry."
She faced Gessler.
"He is mortal sword of the Kachain Chimal. He is defender of Matron Gunth Mac. We must fight to stay alive. There are old wounds, old crimes. We cannot escape. Gunth Mac cannot escape. We fight, will fight."
"And somehow," Bryce mused,
"the adjunct understands the truth of that."
"How?" Kallith shook her head. "I do not know her, but—"
And she pointed at the girl standing near Grub.
"Where this one goes, there will be fire."
Gessler rubbed at his face with both hands.
"Our cedar, Sin. Without her sorcery and Grub's, the Naruk would have defeated us. Not on the ground, but from the sky keeps. So," he sighed, "Sin and Grub saved us all. The adjunct said we'd need them."
"No," corrected Stormy. "She said they'd be safer with us than with her."
Gessler said to Bryce,
"We've been thinking of going after them, into that desert."
"She will not be swayed," said Bryce, "and she wants none of us to follow her. It is her conviction that we will be needed elsewhere. I can't assume command, said Gessler. I'm a hood damned marine, a fucking sergeant.
You was a damned fist, Gessler, Stormy said, for 3 days, till they busted you down, aye. And why was you busted down? No, you don't want to say, do you? Leave it. I won't.
Stormy jabbed a finger at his companion.
You went and thought you could be another Dasim. You went and got us all to swear our souls to a damned god. This ain't your first time as a mortal sword, is it?
Gessler wheeled on Stormy.
How should I know? It's not like Fenner reached down and patted me on the head, is it? And what about you, adjutant? You lied to the damned Empress.
I did what Carthoron and Urko asked me to do.
You betrayed the Empire.
Cedar Syn was laughing, but it was a cold, cruel laugh. Calyth had gone white and had backed up a step, her eyes wide as she looked from Gessler to Stormy and back again. Syn said to Gessler,
That's why you'll be needed, but you won't like it. Ha! You won't like any of it.
Gessler made to advance on the girl, but Stormy stepped into his path and shoved him back.
Will all of you stop it?
Aranik's shout halted everyone. Swearing under his breath, Gessler turned away from Stormy's challenging glare.
Prince, this ain't what I was looking for. I wanted you to take over all command, you or Krukhava. Gods, even that queen you talked about. I don't want any of this.
The matter, said Bryce, has proved far more complicated than even I had thought. But I mean to hold to my agreement with the adjunct. Nor do I expect Queen Abrastel to change her mind either. Our royal titles are nothing but a product of circumstance. They confer no special talent or ability, and we are both aware of that. Mortal Sword Gessler, it is undeniable that you are in command of the most formidable army in this alliance, and as such, the full weight of command must fall on you. The man looked miserable. Snarling, Stormy swung round and stamped back to the waiting Kachain Chimal. The small, hairy dog followed. Gessler shrugged.
We liked it the way we'd made it. God, so long ago now. Hiding in some foul garrison in a smelly fishing village. We ducked down so far it looked like the world had forgotten us. And that was just how we wanted it. And now look at us. God's below.
Bryce cocked his head.
You have been with the adjunct ever since that time? Not quite. We got pulled in with the whirlwind. A mutiny. We blame the Imperial Historian, that's who we blame. Never mind, none of it's worth knowing. It's just a sordid tale of us staggering and stumbling this way and that across half the damned world. We did nothing of note except maybe staying alive, and see where it's got us.
If you and your friend are feeling so trapped, said Bryce, why not just leave? Did you not already call yourself and Stormy deserters?
Wish I could. I really do. But we can't, and we know it.
But why? Gessler looked down abjectly at Grubb.
Because, he whispered like a man condemned, she trusts us.
Now, didn't that go well?
Said Aranict as they rode back towards the column at a slow trot. Bryce regarded her.
There was considerable alarm in your voice, Aranict, when you so startled us all.
Where do gods come from, Bryce? Do you know?
He shook his head, unwilling to stir awake his memories of the seabed, the forgotten menhirs so bearded in slime. He had lost a lifetime wandering the muddy, wasted depths.
I slept, and so wanted to sleep forever. And if this is not the death others find, it was the death that found me. Such weariness, I'd lost the will to drag myself free.
Gessler and Stormy, said Aranict, they are almost within reach.
I'm sorry, what?
Of godhood.
You speak of things Kuru Khan used to talk about, the ancient First Empire notion of ascendancy.
The Destriant spoke of fire.
He struggled to stay on the path she seemed to be taking.
The girl, Sin, Arenict snorted.
Yes, her. Fire at its most destructive, at its most senseless. She could have burned us all to ash and given it not a moment's thought. When you hold such power inside you, it burns away all that is human. You feel nothing. But, Bryce, you don't understand. The adjunct wants Sin with them.
As far away from her as possible? I don't think Tavare would...
No, no, that wasn't her reason, Bryce. It's Gessler and Stormy.
You are right in saying that I don't understand.
Those two men have walked in the hold of fire, in what the sages of the First Empire called Telas. Tavare wants Sin with them because no one else can stand against that child. No one else could hope to survive her power. For when Sin awakens that power, as Calith said, there will be fire.
The adjunct warned of betrayal.
Bryce, Gessler and Stormy are on the edge of ascendancy, and they can feel it. They're both holding on for dear life.
Holding on to what?
To their humanity, she replied. Their fingers are numb. The muscles of their arms are screaming. Their nails are cracked and bleeding. Did you see how the boy watched them, the one named Grub? He stands beside Sin like her conscience made manifest. It is truly outside her now. She could push it away. She could crush the life from it. I don't know why she hasn't already. For all the fire in her hands, her heart is cold as ice.
Are you saying the boy has no power of his own?
She shot him a look.
Did the adjunct speak of him, the boy?
Warily, he nodded.
What did she say?
She said he was the hope of us all, and that in the end his power could prove our salvation.
She searched his face.
Then, Bryce, we are in trouble.
Betrayal. When the face before us proves a lie, when the eyes deceive and hide the truths behind them, will there be no end to such things?
He thought back to the seabed, as he knew he would.
I have these names deep inside me, the names of the fallen. I can hear each one there with its own unique voice. Yet so many sound the same, a cry of pain, of betrayal. So many and so many times. She trusts those two marines, he said. She trusts them not to betray her. It's all she has. It's all she can hope for.
Yes, said Arenict. And worse than that, that all woman, Calith, who said she didn't understand anything, well, she understands all too well. Like it or not, she holds the fate of the Kachain Chemal in her hands. She is the destriant to the matron. Do you imagine she trusts Sin with all their lives, with the matrons and all the other Kachain Chemal? Hardly. She is in the same position as we are. It's all down to Gessler and Stormy, and she is watching those two men fight for everything.
It must be breaking her heart.
She's terrified, Bryce, and so alone, with all that.
He rubbed at his face. Their horses had slowed to a slow amble, directionless. Unaware, the standard bearer had ridden on and was now closing on the column. At this distance, the standard looked like a white flag.
Arenict, what can we do?
No matter what happens, she said, we must stand with them, with Gessler and Stormy and Calith and the Kachain Chemal. But if it comes down to who can we save, if we're left with that awful choice, then it must be the boy.
Those two men are at each other's throat. There must be...
Oh, that. Bryce, they are like brothers, those two. They'll snap at each other, even come to blows. They'll shout each other down, but things would be a lot worse if none of that was happening. What we saw was their humanity, the very thing they're desperate to keep. That was all like a ritual. Of caring, love even.
As if married.
Brothers, I'd say, bound by blood, bound by history. When we witness them argue, we only hear what's said out loud. We don't hear all the rest, the important stuff. Calith is only beginning to understand that. When she does, some of her terror and anxiety will go away.
I hope you are right.
Bryce reined in and then dismounted. He turned to observe the Blue Rose Lancers, waved them back to their flanking patrol. To Aranict, he said,
Let us walk. The vanguard will survive without me a while longer, I'm sure.
He could see her curiosity, but she shrugged and slipped down from her horse. Leading their mounts, they began walking, parallel to the column.
My love, said Bryce, I have known a silence deeper and more crushing than anyone could imagine.
You need not speak of it.
No, you are wrong. But what I must tell you is more than finding a new intimacy between us, though that will be part of it. What I will describe is important. It bears on what you have just said, and, with your help, I hope it will guide us to a course of action. Tell me, what do you know of my death?
She paused to light a new stick from the stub of the old one.
Poison, an accident.
And my corpse?
A revenant stole it.
Stole? Perhaps it seemed that way. In truth, I was retrieved. I was carried back to a place I had been to before. My very name was carved upon a standing stone, joined to countless others.
She frowned, seemed to study the wiry grasses on the ground before them.
Is this what happens, then, to all of us? Our names set in stone? From death to life and then back again, as some sages have claimed?
I do not know what happens, in truth. Whether what I experienced was fundamentally different from what others go through. But I sensed there was something to it that was unique. If I was inclined to blame anyone, it would have to be Kuru Khan. He invoked a ritual, sending me to a distant place, a realm, perhaps, a world upon the floor of the ocean. And it was there that I first met the Revenant, the Guardian of the Names, or so I now call it.
And this was the one who came for you, in the throne room?
He nodded.
Because he possessed your name?
Perhaps, but perhaps not. We met in the Clash of Blades. I bested him in combat.
He failed in his guardianship.
Yes.
When he came for you, said Aranect, it was to set you in his stead.
You have the truth of it, I think. Or so it seemed.
The names you speak of, Bryce, does no one guard them now?
Ah, thus leading us to my resurrection. What do you know of the details surrounding it?
Aranect shook her head.
Nothing. But then almost no one does.
As you might imagine, I think about this often. In my dreams, there are memories of things I have never done or seen. Most troubling, at least at first. Like you, I have no real knowledge of my return to the realm of the living. Was there an invitation? A sundering of chains? I just don't know.
The power to achieve such a thing must have been immense.
Something tells me, he said with a wry smile, even an elder god's power would not have been enough. The desires of the living for the return of the ones they have lost cannot unravel the laws of death. This is not a journey one is meant to ever take, and all that we were when alive, we are not now. I am not the same man, for that man died in the throne room at the very feet of his king.
She was studying him now, with fear in her eyes.
For a long time, Bryce said, I did not think I was capable of finding anything, not even an echo of who I had once been. But then, you.
He shook his head.
Now, what can I tell you? What value does any of this have beyond the truths we have now shared? It is, I think, this. I was released to do something, here in this world. I think I now know what that thing is. I don't know, however, what will be achieved. I don't know why it is so important. The Guardian has sent me back, for I am his hope.
He shot her a look.
When you spoke of Tavare's belief in the boy, I caught a glimmer, like the flickering of a distant candle, as if through murky water, of someone in the gloom. And I realized that I have seen this scene before, in a dream.
Someone, murmured Erenicht. Your guardian?
No, but I have felt that stranger's thoughts. I have dreamed his memories. An ancient house where once I stood, but now it was empty, flooded, dark. Like so much upon the bed of the oceans, its time was past, its purpose lost. He walked inside it, wanting to find it as he once found it, wanting, above all, the comfort of company. But they're gone.
They? People dwelt in that house?
No longer. He left it and now walks, bearing a lantern. I see him like a figure of myth, the last soul in the deep, the lone, dull glow of all he has left to offer anyone. A moment of... He reached up to his face, wiped at the tears. Of light, relief from the terrible pressures, the burdens, the darkness. They had halted. She stood facing him, her eyes filled with sorrow. She whispered,
Does he beckon you? Does he beg your company, Bryce?
He blinked, shook his head. I don't know. He waits for me. I see the lantern's light. I see his shadow. All a thing of myth, a conjuration. Does he wait for the souls of the drowned? It seems he must. When we flounder, when we lose the sense of what is up and what is down, is that not what often happens when one drowns? And we see a lightness in the murk, and we believe it to be the surface. Instead, his lantern calls us down and down.
Bryce, what must you do?
There is a voice within me, he said, his throat suddenly hoarse, thick with emotion. All that the seas have taken, the gods and mortals, all the unwitnessed.
He lifted his gaze to meet her wide eyes.
I am as bound as the adjunct, as driven on to something as she. Was I resurrected to be brother to a king, a commander of armies? Am I here in answer to a brother's grief, to a wish for how things once were? Am I here to feel once more what it is to be human, to be alive? No, there is more, my love. There is more.
She reached up one hand, brushed his cheek.
Must I lose you, Bryce?
I don't know.
Erenicht must have seen his answer, though he spoke it not, for she leaned against him like one falling, and he closed an arm round her.
Dear voice, dear thing that waits inside me, words cannot change a world. They never could. Would you stir a thousand souls, a million? The mud kicked up and taken on the senseless currents, only to settle again somewhere else. Your shadow, friend, feels like my own. Your light, so fitful, so faint, we all stir in the dark, from the moment of birth to the moment of death. But you dream of finding us because, like each of us, you are alone. There is more. There must be more. By all the love in my veins, please, there must be more.
Do not lecture me, sir, on the covenants of our faith.
So much had been given to the silence, as if it was a precious repository, a vault that could transform all it held, and make of the fears a host of bold virtues.
But these fears are unchanged.
Shield Anvil Tanakalian stood before Krugava. The sounds of 5,000 brothers and sisters preparing camp surrounded them. Sweat trickled under his garments.
He could smell his own body, rank and acrid with his wool gambeson's lanolin. The day's march felt heavy on his shoulders. His eyes stung, his mouth was dry. Was he ready for this moment? He could not be sure. He had his own fears with which he had to contend, after all. But then, how long must I wait? And what moment, among all the moments, can I judge safest? The breath before the war cry? Hardly. I will do this now, and may all who witness understand. It has been a long time in coming, and the silence surrounding me was not my own. It was where she had driven me, where she would force us all against the cliff wall into cracks in the stone. Iron, what are your virtues? The honed edge kisses and sparks rain down. Blood rides the ferrule and splashes on the white snow. This is how you mark every trail. Tanakalin looked away. Seething motion, tents rising, tendrils of smoke curling up on the wind. Without a destrient, he said, we cannot know their fate. He glanced back at her, eyes narrowing. Mortal Sword Krughava stood watching seven brothers and sisters assembling her command tent. The skin of her thick forearms, where they were crossed over her breasts, had deepened to bronze, a hue that seemed as dusty as the patches of bared earth all around them. The sun had bleached the strands of hair that escaped her helm, and they drifted out like webs on the hot wind. If she bore wounds from the parley with the adjunct, she would not show them.
Sir, she said, Commander Erakala is not one for indecision. This is precisely why I chose him to command the fleet. You invite uncertainty and think that this is the time for such things, when so much has been challenged.
But, you damned fool, Runthervian saw what was coming. We shall betray our vow, and I see no way out. Mortal Sword, he began, struggling to keep the anger from his voice, we are sworn to the wolves of winter. In our iron we bear the fangs of war. She grunted.
And there shall indeed be war, Shield Anvil.
When you stood before the adjunct, when you avowed service to her and her alone, it was the glory of that moment that so seduced you, wasn't it? Madness. We could not have anticipated what the adjunct intended, he said. We could not have known she would so deceive us. She turned then.
Sir, must I censure you?
Tanakalian's eyes widened. He straightened before her. Mortal Sword, I am the Shield Anvil of the Perish Grey Helms.
You are a fool, Tanakalian. You are indeed my greatest regret.
This time he vowed he would not retreat before her disdain. He would not walk away, feeling diminished, battered. And you, Mortal Sword, stand before me as the greatest threat the Grey Helms have ever known. The brothers and sisters at the tent had halted all activity. Others were joining them in witnessing this clash. Look at you all. You knew it was coming. Tanakalian's heart was thundering in his chest. Krughava had gone white.
Explain that, Shield Anvil.
Her voice was harsh, grating.
On your life, explain that!
Oh, how he had longed for this moment. How he had conjured this scene. Where stood the Shield Anvil, face to face with Krughava? Witnessed and so remembered. This precise scene. And in his mind he had spoken all he would now say, his voice hard and bold, solid and unwavering before this wretched tyrant's ire. Tanakalian drew a slow breath, watched the Mortal Sword tremble with rage, and was not cowed. Adjunct Tavare is one woman, a mortal woman, that and nothing more. It was not your place to avow service to her. We are children of the wolves, not that damned woman. And now see what has happened. She sets our course and it stabs at the very heart of our faith. The fallen god. Hood, take the fallen god. When the Bedarin is wounded and weak, the wolves shall close in. So it is written.
In the name of our gods, mortal sword, he should die by our hand. But none of that matters. Do you truly imagine Tavaray gives a damn about our faith? Does she kneel before the wolves? She does not.
We march to the final war, sir, and such a war demands us. The Perish, the Greyhelms. Without us, there can be no final war, and I will not abide.
A final war? Don't be ridiculous. There's no such thing as a final war. When the last human falls, when the last god breathes his last breath, the vermin shall lock jaws over the carcasses. There is no end, not to anything, you mad, vain fool. This was all about you standing on a heap of corpses, your sword red as the sunset. This was all about Krughava and her insane visions of glory. He gestured furiously at the soldiers gathered round them. And if we must all die for your precious shining moment, why, is it not the shield anvil who stands ready to embrace the souls? That is your role. To bless your willful murder of our brothers and sisters? You want me to sanctify their sacrifice?
Her left hand was on the grip of her sword. The blade was half drawn. She had gone from white to bright red. The berserk rage is almost upon her. She is moments from killing me. By the wolves, see what she is.
The shield anvil, sir, shall not question.
I will bless us, mortal sword, in the name of a just cause. Make your cause just. I plead with you before all these witnesses, before our brothers and sisters, make this cause just.
The sword scraped. The iron sank down, vanished into the scabbard. The fires in her eyes suddenly ebbed.
So we are divided, she said. We are driven apart. The crisis I have feared is finally upon us. The adjunct spoke of betrayal.
Her cold eyes scanned the crowd.
My children, what has befallen us?
Captain Ikarl, one of the last veterans among them, spoke.
Mortal sword. Two sides of an argument can make the complicated seem simple, when it is anything but simple. A third voice can offer reason, and indeed wisdom. We must acclaim a destriant, to bridge this divide, to mend this wound.
She cocked her head.
Sir, do you voice the doubt of many? Do my brothers and sisters question my leadership?
He shook his head, but there was no telling what that negation referred to.
Mortal sword, we are sworn to the wolves of winter. But without a destriant, we cannot reach them. We are severed from our gods, and so we suffer. Krughava, daughter of Nakalat, do you not see how we suffer?
Shaken, her eyes bleak, she regarded Tanakalian once more.
Shield Anvil, do you counsel betrayal of the adjunct Tavaray?
And so it is laid bare. At last it is laid bare.
He raised his voice, forcing himself to remain firm, calm, revealing no hint of triumph.
The wolves howl in the name of war. Our worship was born in the snows of our homeland, in the winter's cruel, icy breath. We came to honor and respect the beasts of the wild, the wolves who shared the mountain fastnesses, the dark forests with our kind. Even as, in our early days, we hunted those very beasts, we understood them, or so we liked to believe.
These words are unnecessary.
No, mortal sword, they are necessary. They are, in fact, vital.
He eyed the others. All had gathered now, a silent mass. 5,000. Brothers, sisters, all. You hear me. You will hear me. You must hear me.
We find ourselves divided, but this crisis has waited for us, and we must face it. A crisis created by the mortal sword's vow to the adjunct. We shall face it, here, now. Brothers, sisters, we have looked into the eyes of the beast, our chosen wildness, and in bold presumption we proclaimed them our brothers, our sisters, our kin.
Voices cried out, angry, harsh with denial. Tanakalian raised his hands, held them high until silence returned.
"A presumption," he repeated. "We cannot know the mind of a wolf no more than we can know the mind of a dog or a Denrabi of the North Seas. Yet we took upon ourselves the most ancient of gods, the Lord and Lady of the Frozen Winter, of all the beasts, of the world's wildness. We vowed ourselves to a house, a hold, where we do not belong." The protests were louder this time, reluctant to die away. Tanakalian waited. "But war? Ah, we knew that well. We understood it. In a manner no wolf of the forest could. Was this to be our cause, then? Were we to be the sword of the wilds, the defender of wolves and all the beasts of forest, sea, plain, and mountain?" He faced Grughava. "Mortal sword?"
"The earliest sentiments whispered of such things," she replied, "as we all know. And we have not gone astray, sir. We have not.
We have, mortal sword, if we continue to follow the adjunct, if we stand beside her in this war she seeks. At last, it is time for me to speak of Destriant Runservian's final warning, uttered to me moments before his death. Hard words, accusing words, even as he denied my embrace."
The shock was palpable, like thunder so distant it was not heard but felt. A tremble in the very bones. "And all that comes, all that now rushes towards us." Krukhava's eyes were wide, and he could see her confusion.
"Tanakalian? He refused you?"
"He did. He never approved of me. But you could hardly have been unaware of that. He must have worked on you, I think, day and night, undermining your decision to make me the Shield Anvil. And when he died, his fears and doubts took root in you."
The look she was giving him was one he'd never seen before. Ikarl asked,
"Shield Anvil, tell us of the Destriant's warning." "Betrayal. He said she would force us to betray our gods. I could not be certain of whom he spoke. The adjunct?" He faced Krughava. "Or our very own mortal sword? It was difficult, you see, for his dislike of me proved an obstacle. That, and the fact that he was dying before my very eyes."
"You speak truth,"
Krughava said, as if astonished.
"Mortal sword, do not think I do not love my brothers and sisters. Do not think I would stand here and lie. I am the Shield Anvil, and for all Runservian's doubts, for all your doubts, Krughava, I hold to my duty. We are divided, yes. But what divides us is so fundamental that to put it into words could strike one as absurd. Upon the side of the adjunct, we are offered a place among mortals, among humans, flawed, weak, uncertain in their cause. Upon the other side, our covenant of faith. The wolves of winter, the wolves of war. The Lord and the Lady of the Beast hold. And in this faith, we choose to stand alongside the beasts. We avow our swords in the name of their freedom, their right to live, to share this and every other world. The question, so absurd, is this: are we to be human, or are we to be humanity's slayers? And if the latter, then what will come of us should we win? Should we somehow lead a rebellion of the wilds, and so destroy every last human on this world? Must we then fall upon our own swords?" He paused then, suddenly drained, and met Krughava's eyes. "Runservian was right. There will be betrayal. In fact, in choosing one side, we cannot but betray the other. Mortal sword, you set your sword down before the adjunct. But long before that moment, you pledged that self-same weapon in the name of our gods. No matter how strong the sword's forging," he said, "no weapon can long withstand contrary pressures. It weakens, it shatters. No weapon has ever bridged a divide, and once drawn, a sword can only cut.
For all the virtues of iron, mortal sword, we are flesh and blood. What awaits us, Krughafer? Which path shall you lead us upon? Shall it be to your personal glory, there at the adjunct's side? Or shall it be in the name of the gods we are sworn to serve? She reeled at his words, seemed unable to speak. The virtue of iron, woman, is that when it strikes true. He faced the crowd. Sisters, brothers of the Grey Helms, there are many gods of war. We have crossed half this world, and we cannot deny the thousand faces, the thousand masks worn by that grim bringer of strife. We have seen mortals kneel before idols and statues, before the likeness of a boar, a striped tiger, or two wolves. We have heard the cries upon the battlefield. He paused and half smiled, as if remembering. The field of battle, yes. By those beseeching cries alone, we might imagine that the greatest god of war is named Mother. He held up his hands again to stay his listeners. I meant no disrespect, dear kin. I speak only to find what sets us apart from all those other blood-soaked cults. What do they seek there in violent battle, those savage faiths? Why, they seek death, the death of their enemies, and if death must come to themselves, then they pray it is a brave one, a glorious one. He strode past Krughafer, was pleased to see her step aside, and faced Ikarl and the others. Scores of faces, eyes fixed upon him now, eyes that slipped over the mortal sword as if she had ceased to exist. He could not believe the suddenness, the sheer immensity of this usurpation. She was fatally weakened. There in the adjunct's command tent, she sought to show none of it, and hid it well indeed. Yet all I needed to do was prod just once, and see what has happened. Tavaray, your denial broke Krughafer, and Krughafer was a woman for whom trust was everything. How could I have not heard the splintering of her spine right then and there? How could I not have understood the moment when she grasped the notion of strategy, of tactics, and made bold her renewed zeal? It was desperate. No matter. But we are not the same as the others. We are not simply one cult of war among many. It is not glory we seek, not in our name at least. It is not even the death of our enemies that so gladdens us, filling our drunken nights with bravado. We are too somber for such things. It is not in us to swagger and bluster. War, my brothers, my sisters, is the only weapon we have left. To defend the wilds. I tell you, I would defy Runthervian's last words. Betray the wolves? No, never. And the day of our battle, when we stand free upon the corpses of our fellow humans, when we have delivered once more the wildness upon all the world, well, then I shall bow to the wolves. And I shall with humility step aside, for it is not our glory that we seek. He swung to stare at Krughafer. It never was. Facing the others again. Must we then fall upon our own swords? No. For as I said earlier, there is no such thing as a final war. One day we shall be called upon again. That is the only certainty we need to recognize. Brothers, sisters, are you sworn to the wolves of winter? The roar that answered his question rocked him back a step. Recovering, he spun round, marched up to Krughafer. Mortal sword, I sought you out to ask you about Commander Erekala and the fleet. You chose him, but I must know, is he a loyal servant to the wolves, or does he worship you? He might as well have slapped her. Yes, I do this before witnesses. All the public slights you visited upon me, at last I can deliver the same to you. How does it feel? Krughafer straightened.
Erekala is most devout, sir. The fleet should have arrived, he said, blockading the harbor and so isolating the spire. Yes? She nodded. And there they await us.
Yes, Shield Anvil.
Mortal Sword, will you return to the fold? Will you lead us in the war to come? Our need for you... She lifted her eyes, silenced him with their icy regard. A sneer curled her lips.
Is clearly past, Shield Anvil.
She turned to the crowd. I relinquish the title of Mortal Sword to the wolves. In my vow to the adjunct, I seem to have betrayed you all. So be it, sirs. Let it be written that the betrayal, so forewarned by Destriant Runservian, belonged not to the Perish Greyhelms, but to Mortal Sword Krughava. The crime is mine and mine alone. Gods, the supreme egoism of this creature. Even in defeat, she will stand upon the mound alone. I divest her of everything. I drive the knife into her very heart. And now she is suddenly transformed into a figure of breathtaking tragedy. How does she manage it? Every time. How it shall be written, he said in a loud voice, remains to be decided. Should you rediscover your faith, Krughava? She bared her teeth.
Should you discover your humanity, Tanakalian? Should you find the courage, who knows where, to see the crisis in your own soul, then do come to me. Until then, I shall ride alone.
He snorted. And will you raise your own tent, too? Cook your own breakfast?
I have ever given thanks to my brothers and sisters, Shield Anvil, for such kindnesses as they volunteer.
She cocked her head.
I wonder how long before doing the same slips from your mind, Tanakalian?
As she walked away, he turned to the tent. Here, my children. Shall I help you with that?
Usurpation?
Krughava swept past Spax, flung her helm into a corner of the tent, and followed it with her gauntlets.
I would drink, Highness.
Abrastel gestured savagely, and Spax shook himself, went over to collect a jug.
Woman, you have the right of it. Get drunk, and then come to my bed. I vow to make you forget all your ills.
The stern woman regarded the Bargast with a measuring stare, as if contemplating his offer. Spax felt sudden sweat upon the small of his back. He quickly poured out a goblet and handed it to her. Queen Abrastel sank back into the heap of cushions.
Well, that didn't take long.
Krughava's eyes flashed.
If I am too shameful in your eyes, Highness, oh, be quiet and drink that down. Spax, be ready to pour her another. I was but musing out loud, Mortal Sword, on my sense of the adjuncts.
Her, and if it pleases, I am no longer Mortal Sword.
No, none of this can be cast at Tavore's feet.
By all the river gods, woman, sit down and drink. In other words, be quiet. Leave me to do all the talking.
What of me, Firehair?
Should the miraculous moment ever arrive when you can say something of value, Spax of the Gilk, be sure to leap right in. Meanwhile, I return to my point. The adjunct. I can't even guess at the manner of it, but clearly she somehow managed to bind you all to her, until the day of the parley, when she went and tore it all apart. Thus, not long, you see. What she made, she then unmade, and I do wonder at her appalling sense of timing.
Krughava's eyes were level above the rim of the goblet.
Highness, what did you make of her?
Spax, hand me that damned jug if all you can do is stare. No, give it to me. Throw yourself down by the curtain. We might need to wipe our feet by the time the night's done. Now, the adjunct. Krughava, I swear I will have you weeping, or whatever else I can wring from you. To hold it all inside as I see you doing will kill you.
Tavore Paran, Highness.
Abrastel sighed, watching Spax settle down near the curtain. "I miss the Cundril," she muttered. She blinked and then looked away, seemed to study one of the thick tapestries hanging from the tent frame. Spax squinted at it. Some faded coronation scene, figures stiff as statues, the kind of formality that spoke of artistic incompetence or the absurdity of genius. He could never make up his mind over such things. "It's just a stupid circlet of gold and silver and whatnot. It's just a stupid proclamation of superiority. Look at all the bowed heads. Where's the real message here? Why, it's with those guards lining the walls and the swords under their hands." "It is difficult," Abrastel said, frowning still at the tapestry. "Where does loyalty come from? What causes it to be born? What lifts one person above all the others so that one chooses to follow her or him? Is it nothing but our own desperation? Is it, as the Cundrils say, that vast crow's wing stretching over us? Do we yearn for the shelter of competence, real or imagined, true or delusional?" Spax cleared his throat.
"In times of crisis, Fireherr, even the smallest group of people will turn their heads, finding one among them. When we have no answers, we look to one who might. And that hope is born of qualities observed, of clearest thought, of wisdom or bold courage, all that each of us wishes to reflect."
Krukhava shifted to regard Spax, but said nothing.
"Reflect, is it?"
Abrastel grunted, drank down a mouthful of wine. "Is this queen a mirror? Is that all I am? Is that all you are, War Chief Spax? A mirror for your people?"
"In many ways, yes. But in looking into that mirror, they ever choose, I think, to see only what they want to see."
"Sir," rumbled Krugava to Spax, "you invite an untenable position. For all who would command, who would take the lead, from the smallest band of warriors to the vastest empire."
She scowled at her goblet and held it out to Abrastel, who leaned forward to refill it.
"Among the perish, upon nights overcast and moonless, 20 hunters each would take to Rath Avaz and row out beyond the fjords. They would light bright lanterns, suspending them on poles out over the black, icy waters. And by that light, they would call from the deeps the three-jawed Nitals, a terrible fish that in vast numbers hunt the Denrabi, and are able to strip those leviathan creatures down to the bones in a single sounding. The Nitals, you see, hunt by the moon's glow, and when they rose to the light, the hunters would spear them."
She fell silent, lids lowering for a time. Spax scratched at the bristle on his jaw, trying to work out the significance of that tale. He glanced at Abrastel, but the queen seemed fixated on the old tapestry.
"Those fish would rise to the surface," Krukhava said in a voice like gravel under a boot heel, "and the light would blind them, freeze them. There was no bravery in slaying them. It was nothing but slaughter, and would only end when the arms and shoulders of the hunters burned like fire, when they could no longer lift their harpoons."
Spax snorted, nodding.
"Yes, it does feel like that at times." "When I think of the wilds," she continued, as if not hearing him, "I think of the Nitals. We humans stand as the brightest light, and before us every living beast of this world freezes in place. My shield anvil has reawakened all the rage in my people, a rage confounded with guilt. We are to be the slaughterers defending the slaughtered."
"The wolves of war! It is a damned cult," snapped Krughava, and then she shook her head.
"The savagery of the wolf inspired us. Is that so surprising?"
"But there must be tenets of your faith," Spax persisted, "that do indeed cry out for retribution."
"Delusions, sir. Highness, speak of the adjunct, please."
"A most driven woman, Krughava. Desperation and terrible need,
But is she a mirror? And if so, what are we all meant to see?
Krukhava looked up, studied Abrastel.
The thought alone makes me want to weep, but I know not why.
To reflect, said Spex, a mirror is made hard, polished, unflawed.
Find a small wine, Spex, Abrastel growled. This one is done. Krukhava, you swore allegiance to the adjunct. Why?
We were troubled. Questions had begun to plague us, especially the Destriant and his highest seneschals, those who had given their lives to the philosophy of our religion. We trained to be the weapons of war, you see, but we had begun to wonder if the only gesture of humanity was the one that delivered violence, destruction. We wondered at the seemingly insurmountable might of vengeance, retribution, and righteous punishment.
Her eyes were bleak.
Is that all we possess? Is there nothing else that might challenge such weapons?
Then, ventured Abrastel, you must have seen something in her, in Tavare Paran. But Krukhava shook her head.
All that I knew of her, in that moment when I pledged my service and that of the Grey Helms, all that I knew, well, it came from the visions of the seneschals. The fallen god was damaged, in terrible pain. Like a beast, like any of us, he lashed out at his tormentors. In that, he was more the wolf than we were, or could ever hope to be. Highness, a knife to his throat would be a mercy. For so many, you must understand this, so many had now gathered to feed on his pain, to drink the sweet venom of his fevered blood. More than that, in witnessing his imprisonment and his agony, they felt themselves elevated. It made them feel powerful, and in that power the only currency was cruelty. After all, is that not always our way?
The dreams of the seneschals, Krukhava? What did they offer?
The iron-haired woman nodded. An alternative. A way out. In those dreams stood a woman, a mortal woman, immune to all magics, immune to the seduction of the fallen god's eternal suffering. And she held something in her hand. It was small, indeed, so small that our dreamers could not discern its nature, but it haunted them. Oh, how it haunted them.
What was she holding? Abrastel demanded, leaning forward. You must have an idea.
An idea? Oh, hundreds of those, Highness. What she held had the power to free the fallen god. It had the power to defy the gods of war and every other god. It was a power to crush the life from vengeance, from retribution, from righteous punishment. A power to burn away the seduction of suffering itself.
Her eyes glittered in the lantern light.
Can you imagine such a thing?
Spax leaned back.
I have seen her enough times. I see nothing in her hand.
Krukhava had set the cup down. She now sat, her left hand held out, palm up, resting on her knee. She gazed down at it as if seeking to conjure all that she needed.
That, she whispered, is not a mirror, but, oh, how I wish it to be one.
Krukhava, Abrastel said in a low, almost tentative voice, in the moment you stood before her, was there not doubt? Was there not even a single instant of uncertainty?
I thought in her eyes, so flat, something, and now I wonder. I cannot help but wonder now if all that I thought I saw was nothing more than what I wanted to see.
The hand slowly curled, closed like a dying flower.
The mirror lies.
Those last words shook Spax to his very core. He climbed to his feet, feeling blood rushing into his face.
Then why didn't you accept your shield anvil's argument? Krukhava, why are you even here?
With desolate eyes, she looked up at him.
I wanted a just war.
I wanted it to be the last war of all wars. I wanted an end. One day the wolves will run only in our memories, our dreams. I do not want to live to see that day."
"There was something there," Abrastel insisted. "In her hand. Your seers saw it, Krukhava. They saw it. You must find out what it was. For all of us to do this, to do as she bids, for us, Krukhava, you must find it."
"But I know what it is, Highness. In this moment, I have found my answer. And I see now how I have watched it weaken, how I have watched its light fade from the world. You see the adjunct's desperation. Oh yes, she is desperate. We are too few, we are failing. That precious thing she found, she paid a price for it. And that price is now proving too high. For her, for the bone hunters, for us."
Spax bared his teeth.
"Then the mirror did not lie."
"The lie is in the faith, sir. The faith that it can win, that it can even survive at all. You see, she is indeed but one woman, a mortal, and her strength is no greater than anyone else's. She has been at war, I now think, all of her life. Is it any wonder she now stumbles?"
Spax thought back to that parley, and then shook his head.
"From somewhere, Krukhava, she is finding strength. I saw it. We all did, damn you!"
"She turned me away,"
Abrastel snorted. "You feel slighted? Is that where all this has come from?"
"Highness," Krukhava's tone hardened. "From the very beginning, I saw myself as the reflection of her faith. I would be her one unshakable ally, sworn to her and her alone, no matter where she would lead us. And I knew that we understood each other, and that as much as I needed her and what she held inside, she in turn needed me. Do you grasp any of this? I was the source of her strength. When her faith faltered, she needed only to look at me."
Krukhava held her palms against her face, covering her eyes, and slowly leaned forward. Muffled, she said,
"She turned me away."
Spax looked over at Abrastel and met the queen's steady gaze. The Gilk war chief slowly nodded.
"You leave me in a difficult position," Abrastel said. "Krukhava, if I understand you correctly, it is now your thought that in denying you, the adjunct has in effect lost her faith. Yet was this not a matter of disposition? Two objectives, not one, and so we are to be divided in strength. And given the nature of the glass desert..." But Krukhava was shaking her head behind her hands.
"Do you truly imagine that she believes she can cross it with her army?"
Spax loosed a stream of Bargast curses and then said,
"What would be the point of that? If she intends suicide... No, her ego cannot be so diabolically monstrous that she'd take all her soldiers with her."
"You are yet, I think,"
and Krukhava's hands fell away as she looked up at him,
"to acquaint yourself with the third voice in this eternal argument."
"What do you speak of?"
"I speak of despair, sir. Yes, she would will herself and her army across the glass desert, but she does so without faith. It is gone, driven away."
Abrastel said,
"Sincerely as you may have seen yourself as the true and unshakable reflection of Tavare's faith, I believe your conviction that Tavare saw you the same way, in those precise terms, is itself an article of faith. This place of despair where you now find yourself is entirely of your own making."
Krukhava shook her head.
"I have watched it weaken. I have watched its light fade from the world. And I have seen her desperation. We are too few. We are failing. That shining thing there in her hand is dying."
"Tell me its name," Abrastel whispered. "This argument of yours,
You name one side faith and another despair. Speak to me of what she holds, this failing, dying thing.
Spax turned to Abrustle in surprise.
Why, Firehair? You do not yet know? That which fades from the world? Its name is Compassion. This is what she holds for the fallen god, what she holds for us all.
And it is not enough, Krughava whispered. Gods below, it is not enough.